The Bible reading this morning comes from John chapter 20, and I'm reading the first 18 verses. If you have a black Bible, you might want to turn to page 1074. John chapter 20. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciples started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had risen from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying, and as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned towards him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her.
Morning, how are you? Good. I'm going to introduce you to an ancient greeting that is used by the Christian church all over the world after 2,000 years. And it goes like this. He is risen. Very good. This is how it goes. He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Very good. My name is John. I think I might have said that, but I'm having an interesting day with only one cup of coffee in my veins so far. I want to tell you about one of my favourite TV shows at the moment. It's called Shark Tank. Anyone heard of it? A few people seen it? I think it's a good show. How do I know it's on? Because we have a wonderful thing called TiVo. Thank Jesus for recording things, which means I can watch it after I get home after church on Sunday night. I like it because, in particular, I get to see a couple of sharp and successful businesswomen and how they operate. Jamie Ellis is one. She's the founder of Boost Juice. And then there is Naomi Simpson, founder of Red Balloon, and of online experiences where you go online and you can book in for V8 supercar rides, skydiving, rally driving. It's my kind of style of thing. And of course, I've worked out that you just don't click online and have the experience online, but you buy the tickets, and then you go have the experience in real life and get the daylight scared out of you. So I appreciate what she does. And I love watching how these women, in particular, assess a business that is put before them, because they are looking to invest. And they want a good return on their investment. I find these women refreshing. Sometimes they take an adventure on, and it's different to how the three businessmen respond. And they bring what can only be described, I've searched for a term, but they bring a particular feminine touch to the celebrations of a joint investment that they've gone into, which is so much different to the stuffed shirt men. And as I think about these women, I wonder, how would they assess Jesus if he appeared on Shark Tank with his venture? What would be their take on Jesus? These are intriguing questions for me, and my intrigue is amped up when I wonder how first century businesswomen would assess Jesus. What would their take be on him? There were a number of businesswomen in the first century, and they did very well, thank you very much. Not that they had just a Boost juice or Red Balloon. Maybe they had Boost figs and fashion, I don't know. But they were very successful in the first century. What would a first century businesswoman's take be on Jesus and his mission, and particularly Easter? What would that be? I mean, if we had access to a businesswoman's records of her assessment, you kind of wonder whether it would be legal to have, because in the first century, particularly in Jewish society, women's thoughts weren't considered much and they weren't allowed to give testimony in court. So what would it be like? So if you had one, would it be legal to have? Here's the fascinating thing for me. We do have access to a first century businesswoman's take on Jesus. And she was apparently very successful in her business. Her name is Mary Magdalene. In Luke's Gospel, chapter 8, we read that she is named amongst three women who supplied the financial needs of Jesus' venture for 3 years. She financially backed his venture for 3 years, and that included feeding 12 young men known as disciples every day for 3 years. There's some trips to Aldi and Woolies there, is there not? So what's her take on Jesus? That's what I want to look at today. We catch up with Mary on the Sunday after Jesus has been executed. It's before dawn, it's still dark, therefore, and Florence and the Machine's song, Shake It Out, might have run through her head, particularly the line that goes, it's always darkest before the dawn. It's early spring, which means that the air is more than a little crisp on naked cheeks as she walks to the graveyard. She's on the way to the tomb to finish off burial preparations because the time was short on Friday. The cold, dark morning is the perfect match for her emptiness. Solitude, loneliness have made their presence felt in Mary's soul. No more the joy that had sent her spirit soaring or the peace that she once had. It's gone. The death of someone you love and honor will always do that to you, rob you of those things. It's cruel enough when death is a private affair. But when the one you loved and honored is ridiculed, tormented, and tortured publicly, the grief is almost beyond bearing. At the point of death, he cried out three words, "It is finished." And when his life departed, so did hers. And that memory could well have brought Florence's words to mind, "It's always darkest before the dawn." Now all she could do was finish off the burial ritual. It was her last act of kindness as memories played out right before her eyes. Like the day she decided to financially back Jesus. What he had taught simply made sense. It all stacked up. And somehow it gave her a sense that there was purpose in life beyond the business world. And so she decided to follow Jesus, be his disciple, and back him financially. And then a cold shiver ran down her spine, not sure if it was the pre-dawn air or her past. She had thought her past had gone. At least that's what Jesus told her. You see, the tormentors of his soul, all seven demons, fled at his command. Now, these are not the demons that are often associated with business world, not the demons of drink or the demons of drugs or the demons of gambling. She was possessed by seven real demons, minions of Satan. When Jesus commanded them to leave her, they fled. His words burst her shackles. Death departed and life came in. Jesus had reached into her night and ushered in a new dawn. But now, with every step she took to the tombstone, that dawn disappeared and her night grew darker. The path turned, the clearing of as she turned, death's mocking voice leered out of the gnarly olive trees that mark that part of Jerusalem. Tomb after taunting tomb called out her name as if the seven demons were leering at her one more time to torment her. And maybe Florence's words echoed in her mind. And all the ghouls came out to play, and every demon wants his pound of flesh. It's always darkest before the dawn. And then she heard some more of Jesus' words uttered as he died. My God, why have you forsaken me? She knew those words. She knew what it was to be a successful businesswoman, so much so that she was known as the Mary, the Magdalene, that is, Mary of Magdala, a seaside town just out of Jerusalem. She was the one that everyone knew for miles and miles and miles. She was the one who made a killing in the fashion industry with her fine and expensive purple linen. She knew the taste of success, and she also knew the reality of a glass ceiling. And she knew what it was to be therefore God-forsaken at that moment. And more than that, she knew what it was to be possessed by demons. And now her Jesus had left her to walk in the dark of the pre-dawn alone. Why have you forsaken me? She shouted. But no one heard. No one listened to Jesus either. She neared the tomb and tried to focus tear-filled eyes, and she rounded the last of the gnarly olive trees, and then a cold chill ran down her spine. Grave robbers, plague of the city. They had no fear of the dead, no respect for the grieving. They would break into the tombs and steal the linen that had wrapped the dead bodies filled with spices. They would then harvest the spices and sell both the linen and the spices on the black market. Grave robbers. Why can't they leave him alone? She cried as a desecrated tomb launched silent spears into her torment. So she raced back to Peter and to John, two of Jesus' closest disciples. Grave robbers have stolen Jesus, she said. I just don't know. They didn't take just the linen. They took him as well. I don't know where he is. And so the fishermen's legs quickly carried them to the open tomb. John arrived first, but he hesitated at the entrance. He peered into the darkness to see the grave clothes laying neatly where Jesus had been laid. Grave robbers wouldn't be so tidy, he mused. He had no time for a second thought because Peter barreled past him like a man who'd lost a grip on himself straight into the tomb. Weariness had taken its toll on Mary, and by the time she arrived, the two disciples were leaving, and she was stunned and angered by their faces. They seemed bemused yet joyful. How could they be so blind? Could they not see what was going on? She brushed away Peter's offer to walk her home. They might be able to just walk away, but I can't do that. And emotions welled up again, and a torrent of tears and sobbing racked her body. She was like those who've lost sons in the wars, never able to earth their grief because there was no resting place. Not only had she lost Jesus, she had now lost everything. 3 years of financial investment down the toilet. But it wasn't just the money. She lost her life as well. Jesus had cast out all seven demons, and for the first time in her life, her soul was no longer restless like a windswept beach. After those demons left, she experienced rest, the rest that Jesus had promised when he said one day, "Come to me all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Rest for your soul." When Jesus stepped into her shark tank, she could not help but figure it was worth investing in him, and heavily. And as she did, she kept following Jesus every day for 3 years, listening to his teaching, his yoke, because his yoke gave her rest, his teaching gave her rest in her soul. And that rest trumped every business deal, every adrenaline rush she had ever known. But now, Jesus has gone, and her soul was far from at rest. It was kind of contorted into a never-tightening knot which threatened to tear her heart apart. She was a shrewd businesswoman, but now she was asking questions like, "Did I get dudded? Did he fool me? Did he fool all of us? Was he just another popular preacher like those on early morning television? Charismatic, winsome, compelling? Had he taken us, a gullible crowd, for every dollar we had?" And he promised to deal with sin. You know, all the skeletons in the closet would be wiped out. That, and she, just like a business debt, would be paid in full. Jesus promised to pay in full, to take care of all the sin. And she needed that because there were times when her business dealings were not, well, they weren't above board. And there were times when her business ethics left more to be desired. Jesus promised to deal with it all because he said, "God so loved the world that he sent his only Son, that whoever believes in him would not perish but have everlasting life." But now he's dead and he's missing. Am I forgiven? Is my past wiped out? And what about future hope? Jesus spoke about a time when life would be like a banquet, a wedding feast, not like those in Sydney that go for a few hours and you're lucky if you get a third course. No, this was like a Middle Eastern wedding. They go for days and days and days, non-stop feasting. Jesus spoke of a time like that when death and mourning and pain would be no more, nor would there be crying, and God himself would wipe away all of our tears. Well, what now? Jesus is dead and he's missing. Who's going to wipe away my tears? And then an inconceivably terrifying horror crept over her as cold fingers clutched her heart. Without Jesus, everything. Without Jesus, everything he taught. Without Jesus, all the hopes he had awakened within her vanished. Hoping all of that was a bizarre nightmare, she bent over to look inside the tomb. And then through her tears, she saw two men sitting near the grave clothes. And it eluded her why Peter and John had not seen them. And she thought that the dawning light might have been playing a trick on her eyes until they asked the question, "Why are you crying?" Man, those words stung. It's kind of like as if to say, you have no reason to cry. And she thought all these strangers had to do was look around and see why she was crying. "They've taken my Lord," she said. "They've taken him away. I don't know where they've put him." And then she turned away, no longer able to bear the pain of looking where Jesus ought to have been. And she saw another who asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you're looking for?" And the second time these words stung, and she thought, why are these men so insensitive and blind? She thought, maybe the gardener, maybe he would know. "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've put him and I'll go get him." She didn't wait for his answer. And she looked once more in the tomb, losing herself in her tears and her grief. The black hole beckoned. 3 years of backing Jesus flashed through her numb mind. "Mary," she heard him call. She pictured him sitting around a table joking with the disciples. "Mary," he would call, inviting her to join in the festivities. Every time he spoke her name, It was as if she was the most important person in the world. She felt accepted, she felt clean. And her lips kind of curled into a smile because he spoke everybody's name as if they were the most significant person on the planet. Mary, she heard him call again. They were gathered on an emerald hill. The water sparkled in the early summer sun. The disciples were strutting around like peacocks, ordering adults this way and that. He called her name, and she led a gaggle of children dancing right past frowning disciples. She heard his words. "I am the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep." And then the tomb leapt up and grabbed her again. The sound of the hammer of the nail ringing in her ears. The silence deafened her as the spear was shoved into his lifeless body. A distant memory played his voice. "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, and they recognize my voice." Mary, she heard her name one more time. Though this time it was different. It was not inside her head. It wasn't from a memory sound bite. Her name flew out at the air as if, and she turned around to see the voice, and this was no gardener, and so she leapt out with "teacher." The word just flew out, and her arms went after her to catch it. She wanted to hold him, to hug him, to never let him go, for this was her teacher. This was Jesus. She lunged to embrace him, but he said, "Don't hold me, for I've yet to return to the Father." And this is not time for clinging on to me as though I was a dream. This is the time for celebration. Death has been defeated. That means the debt of sin has been paid, paid in full. Your past, Mary, it has been dealt with. Your future is now secure. I am going to prepare a place for you to live with God forever. And Mary, when I said, "Come to me and I will give you rest," those words have more power now because I said them before I was crucified. Now I am alive. I have defeated death. I am victorious. Those words have much more power now. Mary, your soul can have rest because I am with you always, he said. Now you can know that it's not about the next car or the next holiday, the next experience, the next business deal. Your soul will find rest in me, he said. No need for you, Mary, to chase after comfort or status or influence that your business dealings bring. Your soul will have rest in me. I can give you rest, for I have defeated death. It's time to celebrate. So, go to my brothers. Tell them I am returning to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. And those words brought comfort to Mary. I'm returning to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. God is no longer simply the God of Jesus. He is my God. And he's not simply the Father of Jesus. He is my Father. Mary Magdalene at that point realized that she was now a daughter of God. And Jesus taught her that his Father was just like him, kind, merciful, reaching out to touch the untouchables, full of grace, the one who said to a woman caught in the very act of adultery, "I do not condemn you," and he forgave her sins. So instead of being a shrewd and successful businesswoman, Mary was now a treasured possession. Someone of whom Jesus said, "I would rather die than live without you." The questions of the men in the tomb and the gardener no longer seemed out of place. There was no need to mourn or weep. No need to look for the living among the dead. The hope of the world once thought dead is alive. The raging ocean of despair was stilled. The storm of doubt was calmed. The new day's sun warmed her back as she ran to the disciples now. The tombs that hours before had taunted her name were now silenced, for they had been defeated. But it was not just for herself. "Tell my brothers," he said. So she bounded up the stairs to the upper room and pounded on the door until it was sheepishly opened. You know, if Mary was to appear on this platform now, she'd say the same things to us as she said to those in the first century. She would say, "You would be mad. You would be mad not to invest everything you have in Jesus, particularly because of Easter Sunday. For he is risen. And by his resurrection, he set a seal on all the promises that he made and all the dreams that he awakens within us." She would say, "That's my take on Jesus as an investor." And apart from that, she would say, "All your skeletons can be dealt with. Your past can be paid in full. Your future, it can be secure. And you can have rest in the depths of your soul. His resurrection declares it so forever." And she would say, "Do whatever you can to discover how you can connect with my Jesus. Talk to a friend who follows Jesus. If not, talk to anyone who's here who follows Jesus. If you can't find a friend, talk to John. He's the bald one in the front of you right now." Because Mary would say, she would say to us just what she said to the disciples when they finally opened the door in the upper room. She burst in and burst out with, "I have seen the Lord. He is risen. And he is risen. He is risen. And he is risen indeed." Again, he is risen. He is risen indeed.